All right, thank you, Daryl. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kulk. We're meeting for a informal on case number PU14-690. It is November 20th, approximately 2:35. The informal is for Otter Tail's 2014 transmission facility cost recovery rates. I'm joined by my colleagues in the commission, Commissioner Fedorchak and Commissioner Crispin. What I'd like to do is just go around and get everyone's appearance from Otter Tail, see if Commissioner Crispin has any comments, then I'll throw mine out there and then turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Fedorchak, to do the rest of the informal.
Okay, so mine.
Start out again with
Bryce Haugen, rates analyst, Otter Tail Power.
Yeah, there's Bryce and Bruce, that's right. Thanks, Bryce.
Stuart Tomerdahl, manager of regulatory administration, Otter Tail.
Jason Wires, manager of delivery planning.
Thank you, Jason.
Al Kakritz, manager of project management.
And Bruce Gearhardson from the attorney, right?
Yeah, and I'll also offer both our presentation and for receipt into this record. I'll also, if I can, just say that our comments at the table, too, are part of the record from the last proceeding. And they, if you don't mind, I'll ask that they be part of the proceeding in this one, part of the record in this one as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bruce. And we're joined by Mike Diller from staff. Commissioner Crispin, any opening comments?
I have no opening comments. Thank you.
Like I said, I apologize. I have to step up for another meeting. The only question that I'll have when you gentlemen go through the presentation is just, you know, most of this stuff, I'm pretty familiar with how these transmission tariffs go. It's just somewhere in there, maybe talk about the depreciation and how you get to those numbers and if those can be changed. And other than that, I'm pretty familiar with what we're all trying to do here. So I'd all listen to the tape when I get a chance. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague. And thank you guys for coming up.
Thank you.
Okay, why don't we just go start with the presentation and we can ask questions as we go. You bet.
Okay.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Commissioner. The presentation agenda that we're looking at here.
Yep.
You can go ahead. Okay. Go ahead and flip to page 2. Now, I've got a couple of slides that I'll kind of start out at the beginning to just give some general background information on the transmission rider. And then Jason and Al are going to provide us with a little bit more detail on the summary of the existing projects within the rider, some changes that are occurring to a couple of those projects. There's two new projects that we're proposing to include in the rider, and those will be reviewed, as well as a status update on maybe some projects that we could see out there into the future. I'll come back and take a look at some unique items, just some other little things that we want to touch on that are kind of unique to this particular update, and then we'll get into the revenue requirement summary and recap at the end of the presentation. We move on to page 3. Again, this is just a little bit of a history of our transmission rider. It was established in the spring of 2012. Our first rates went into effect on May 1st of 2012. Subsequent to that, by September 1st of each year, we've submitted an update to the rider. And this particular application is our third update with a proposed effective date of January 1, 2015. This slide is kind of a summary of, okay, what goes into an annual update? What kinds of things are we considering or do we consider in an annual update? If we start at the top on the left, you know, the first things we do is we replace the forecast information with actual information for the current recovery period. And this flows across all aspects of the rider, the investment costs, the expenses, whether it's the MISO expenses we get or the depreciation expenses that we're booking, timing of the investments, those kinds of things and expenses, the revenues, as well as the actual collections that we receive through the mechanism. And all these things do is allow for a true up from forecast information to actual information. And that just helps to make sure that there's really no over or under recovery of costs over the life of the rider. The second thing we do is we look at out to the next recovery period that we're proposing, and we factor in our current estimates on investment in the projects, what the expenses will be, what revenue credits will be coming back in, and in even forecasting what we anticipate collections to be. And this is this exercise or this portion of the update is really, the basis for calculating the new rate. As I mentioned earlier, we're looking at a couple of new projects to be added into the rider, and so we seek approval to add those in. And then lastly, just looking at some unique items often that may come up during the course of the year that we have to make an adjustment for. In this particular case, we've got three different items, which I'll touch on a little bit later towards the end of the presentation. Not real material things, but just want to make sure that you're aware of them. So I think with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jason and let him take us through the next segment of our presentation.
Thank you. Just to recap here, you've heard this before, transmission expansion and investment. It's driven by a variety of different factors. Reliability is a major driver in new transmission projects. Market efficiency, ensuring access to low-cost generation. We're also working to make sure we can support current and future generation development, as well as making sure the system is versatile to be able to accommodate future generation policy changes that come forward. Slide 6 includes a summary of the current projects in our transmission rider. You'll see here there's 12 different projects that are currently included in the rider. There's 14 listed in total. Stuart mentioned there's two new ones that we're seeking to add during this particular docket. In total, you'll notice here that the total investment of all these transmission projects that support the region are over $2 billion, and the associated revenue requirements that we're requesting from our customers within North Dakota is just over $6 million. Taking a look at those previous projects, in addition to the new ones being requested through this filing, you'll notice that the stars on this map represent the numbers from the previous table. The previously approved projects are shown in the blue stars here, and as you'll notice, we have created a regional transmission system with projects that basically span our entire service territory. And if you look at the projects being added during our filing for this year, we're looking to add one new project, number 13, down near Summit, South Dakota, and number 14, a new project near Jamestown. The details of these projects will be discussed on a future slide. Here again is a list of 12 of the 12 projects that are included in our current transmission rider. You'll see that these projects have varying in-service dates. Some of these have been in service for a few years. Some will be fully placed in service in the near future, while others have a few more years to go until they will be placed into service. As the projects are placed into service, the ongoing revenue requirements will be decreased as we transition these projects from construction to actual operation. Once these projects are operational, then the depreciation of the assets begins and the revenue requirements will flatten out in time so that the revenue requirements become more of a stable impact to customers.
So how long does that take? So I see here you've got some from 2011 and 12 where they were in service. So construction is completed then, right?
Yep.
And they're still incurring new costs? Or at what point are you going to fold those into? You just haven't had a rate case since then?
Exactly.
Correct.
Yep. So they are in the rider. The depreciation, we start recording the depreciation of those investments once they're placed into service. And that gets factored into the ultimate net rate base upon which we, in the rider, upon which we, you know, determine the rates. And so as your depreciated balance starts to decline, that's going to have a reducing effect on the revenue requirement mm-hmm. within the rider.
What's NERC alert on page 6? And then I assume it's the same as NERC compliance on page 8.
Yeah, that's correct. And we'll get into that on the next slide. So good lead in.
This is Al Kakritz. For the NERC alert portion, this is an update to the project as noted in the table. That's really, if you recall back in 2003, the outage out east in Ohio and such, where we had the significant blackout, that really drove the facility's rating and reliability needs for the utility, electric utility industry. That triggered North American Energy Reliability Corporation to issue an alert to make sure that all your facilities meet the ratings that they're supposed to meet. So if you recall, that was related primarily to some tree clearance issues where the lines tripped out because of lack of clearance to trees. And so that triggered the whole electric industry to look at, do you meet your facility ratings and your clearance requirements? So if you turn to the next slide, slide 10, I believe it is. For Otter Tail Power Company, we started looking at our facilities, which are 115 and 230 kV facilities. We started looking at those in 2012. We went through trying to figure out, you know, what we really needed to do for those facilities. So we looked at our line-to-ground clearances and our clearances to our guys and such that are attached to the poles, and come up with what we needed to do to meet the code clearance requirements. Some of these requirements came about because we rated a line at a certain rating, and then when we went out and realized for that rating, what did the line do for sag and the temperature of the line, and did that create a clearance for us? And so we went through that. We took a small segment in 2013 where we call this our phase one look. It was about 178 miles, a 230,000-volt line. We looked at that, and last year we came with that information and predicted where we're going to go with our phase two information, which was the rest of our 230 system and our 115 system. As we went through that, we identified what we called points of interest. There were situations where we didn't make clearance either to our guys that are currently attached to our structures, or to ground, or any other kinds of thing. If somebody accidentally built a building out there that they shouldn't have, if they put up some fence, if there was a body of water that now appeared like it could actually be capable of being boated on, or if there were perhaps some sort of clearance to some other facility, if another utility built an electric system underneath our line, did that, when that got placed in service, did that violate a code clearance requirement? So we went through all those. From the information we had in 2013, you can see by our table, we thought we would have about 830 of these points of interest or things like this that we would have to figure out and accommodate or fix. And in 2014 now, as we've gone through the rest of our engineering assessment and such, we can see that we had underestimated where we're going to be for fixes that we would need to take on. So originally in 2014, we determined that we were going to have to mitigate approximately 1,900 different issues for our system. Through some engineering assessment and some other analysis, we were actually able to limit or reduce almost 600 or 595 of these points of interest, and landed almost at approximately 1,300 items that we would have to mitigate. That really caused this change in what we figured our forecast would be in 2013 to where we're at right now, from $9.7 million to $16.1 million as we look ahead into 2015 and 2016. The other project, any other questions on our NERC alert at all?
Is that a number for your whole system? That's not just North Dakota's.
Correct. That's our whole system.
Right.
Does this include cybersecurity?
This does not include cybersecurity.
Okay.
We're just starting that project right now for cybersecurity.
Do you think there's guidelines in there that are excessive? I mean, are we spending a little bit of money to fix a few things that were serious potential flaws, and then a whole bunch of money to try and get things just so perfect that, you know, it's maybe silly?
Yeah. You know, they are really based on the National Electric Safety Code, are they excessive? You know, we haven't had a problem in our system, really reliability-wise, for the things that we're required to fix. That being said, we do want to, you know, meet the National Electric Safety Code. We realize that that's a code requirement that we really should meet. The issue just comes up because, you know, back in the day when things were built, we didn't have the technology we have today to be out there, and you know, we can now use a laser and radar to figure out what all the terrain really is. And so now when you go back and you measure it, you think, okay, well, we missed that back in 1935 or 1940 when we originally designed and constructed these facilities. So we want to meet the code requirement. We wouldn't believe that we'd have a problem if we didn't change things, but we do want to meet the code requirement. The other project I was asked to speak about was... I'm sorry. No, go right ahead.
You know, like, I'd be disappointed if we're tearing out a lot of perfectly usable equipment because some standard just changed. And, I mean, if it has to be in order to, you know, prevent liability and things like that, then I get that sometimes it has to be. But I guess I've never been a fan of just tearing everything all apart every time some rule change and there's a new standard.
Right.
If it's not important, you know, in a few years there might be a storm that breaks that pole off anyway, and then you'll be replacing it and get it up to standard then. But
yeah, there are those.
I hope there's some reasoning being done in this too, not just, well, here's a list of 1,000 and some things that need to be done, and we got to get them all done in the next year or two.
Right, and for clarity, this, you know, the standard, the clearances and such, were really the clearances as required when we built the facilities. But some of the things that did change over time, as I mentioned, really was better knowledge of terrain today than we would have had then. The fact that we potentially are rating the line higher today than we would have back then, which then we would have. Now we say, well, the line's going to sag more now than we thought in 1940. So that's another thing. And so we're getting potentially more rating out of a line than we would have 50 years ago. Also, the situation with crossings, as I mentioned, where, you know, I worked in rugby for 6 years and had good relationships with the REA and other utilities there. But, you know, sometimes somebody forgets to, hey, I better contact Otter Tail, or I better contact North Central Electric, and we have a crossing, and did we remember to do the right thing there from a design perspective? So,
are these going to be repeated? Is there some standard for, you went out and did, you're supposed to do it all, and now you're supposed to do this again in 10 years, or is this just...
We don't believe that this specific situation will get repeated. And, in fact, for our new facilities, what we're doing now is when we design the line, not that we didn't back then, but when we design a line now, we do put a little extra clearance requirement in there. So if it's supposed to be 31 feet, we might say 33 feet. And then we actually are going to go back and we fly all these with the radar later, and we measure all the clearances. And if there are situations that need to be modified, we do that right away. Matter of fact, it might sound, well, how would you not catch something? Well, when you have densely treed areas and such, you can't really read through that vegetation even in the wintertime, and so you do have a few things that will come up, and I think we'll be, I don't think it will be modified in the future. So, did you look like you wanted to say
Specific to Commissioner Crispin's question regarding you know, the work that's being done to fix the issues being found. I will mention there has been a lot of rigorous effort within Otter Tail looking at different alternatives on how to mitigate some of these clearance violations. For example, in some of the engineering analysis, we can find if we derate a line, we can actually not have to achieve such a large clearance between the ground and this conductor. So we've gone in, we've looked at historic flows on lines, we've gone and done an analysis on what we think the worst-case flow would be, and we've actually derated a fair amount of these lines, being able to reduce the cost of what it would be to restore that line when you back up to what we thought it was originally. In addition, the technique of phase raising is being used on these old structures that we have, and Al can probably speak to this in a little more detail, but these poles that are 40 years old, if they have not been tested as being rotten, we're actually going out there and we're reusing the same poles, just using some steel mechanisms to raise those structures up, utilizing the same hardware, the same poles and everything, just to achieve that more, that additional clearance. So it's not a wholesale go out, rip it out and replace it with a new structure. We are trying to leverage existing assets to the extent we can.
Appreciate that. Yeah, I think, you know, really what Jason's trying to speak to is we feel like we're taking a prudent approach to the requirement and spending the least amount of money as necessary to meet the goal. So we're not interested in spending any more than we have to either. So the next project, barring any other questions, is the Oaks Area Transmission Project. We had a minor uptick in spending here and forecasted cost for this project. This is a situation from that was spoke to earlier. It's a reliability project down in that area. South of Oaks, we have a radio line of 41,000 volts that goes into town. We realized a few years ago that we needed to upgrade the facilities there. And so we are constructing 9 miles of new 40,000 lines. So there'll be parallel lines that go up to Oaks along with two other 40,000 lines that come through that area. And then we're upgrading in the substation. It's a 230 to 416 substation. We're upgrading that substation to have a second transformer, some high side breakers on the 230,000 volt system, and additional 40,000 breakers on the 40,000 side. As shown on the slide 11, you can see we have about a $300,000 uptick in costs there, and really, we had some issues. Soils in that area were not very good. It caused us to take a more rigorous design for foundations. And even though they're direct embed poles, we still do a sampling of that and determine what we need to do to set our poles into that soil. And we had to put some laminated structures in, so self-supporting, unguided structures. And we had constraints around our substation with the diversion of the water systems that are down there. We're right next to a pumping station as well. And so all that being told, and our need to improve reliability even at the facility or at the town of Oaks itself through some automated switching with our GOAB switches and radio communications there, that increased our cost about $300,000. And so really feel that we're still on track, and we feel although it's a minor uptick in cost, we wanted to come through to the commission and explain that change.
Moving on to the new projects included in our request for the transmission rider this year, the first one is the replacement of the Summit transformer. This is a reliability project between both Otter Tail Power and Western Area Power. Down in that Summit area. This project is driven by a need for more capacity of the existing transformer plus the existing age of that transformer. It's over 50 years old and has been showing some signs of failure. Add that on top of the capacity constraints there, and it's just time to upgrade this transformer. The total cost of the project is just over $1 million, as you'll see there. Otter Tail's share will be about $950,000 here. One slight correction, in our application on page 9, there was a typo for this project. It was listed as $7.07 million. It's actually $1.07 million. However, all the calculations back in the attachments were in line with the estimates we currently have on the slide here. The other project being requested for inclusion this year is covering the substation upgrades that we completed at the Spiritwood substation to accommodate Great River Energy's new generator. This generator interconnection was actually processed through the MISO, and through this process at MISO, Otter Tail was assigned 50% of the total project costs, which results in us requesting about $327,000 of equivalent capital investment from North Dakota customers.
Who is the other half of the cost?
The rules in place at the time this project was approved has 50% to the generator, Great River Energy in this case, 50% to Otter Tail, the transmission owner.
Are you taking all the power from there?
No. Great River is the owner and off-taker of the generator.
So why is it your... Why do you have to pay half of it?
We're the...
You're the transmission.
Right, we're the incumbent transmission owner in that area. And if you recall, there were some changes to the MISO tariff for a cost sharing of these types of projects. Originally, it was 50-50 between the incumbent transmission owner and the generator. In 2009, that changed to 90-10, 90% generator, 10% to transmission owner if the upgrades were greater than 345 or greater. In this case, the tariff in place at the time required 50-50 cost sharing between the generator and the transmission owner. Moving into some potential projects that may be included in future transmission rider filings from Otter Tail, slide 14 includes a new project near Partial. Historically, at Partial, we've had an interconnection. We've had an interconnection between Otter Tail and Montrail Williams out in this area. We had a 69 kV to 416 kV interconnection to provide mutual service back and forth to each other. Due to the oil load growth out in this area, Montrail upgraded their system from 69 kV to 115 kV, therefore making the existing 69 kV interconnection no longer usable. So currently we're working with Montrail to reestablish this interconnection with them at Partial by the installation of a new transformer. We're estimating the cost of this to be around $466,000 and hopefully have that in service this coming spring. Two other potential transmission projects I'll touch on here today for the potential inclusion in our future transmission riders are located in north central Minnesota, northwestern Minnesota, depending on how you view the state there. The first project is a new 115 kV line in the Clearbrook area. You'll see on the map on this slide the line added in green from Clearbrook down towards the Winger 230 kV facility. Basically, the need for this project is being driven by adding a second high voltage transmission path into the Clearbrook area. We're currently working on some joint transmission planning studies with Minn Kota Power Cooperative. At this time, we're anticipating a cost to Otter Tail around $11 million with an in-service date in the late 2018, early 2019 timeframe. A second project in this same area is a potential line from Winger up to Thief River Falls. On your map on the slide here, you'll see that in blue. That's essentially a 230 kV extension from Winger up to the Thief River Falls area to help support the northwest Minnesota area. What's happening here is as load is growing, we're seeing the 115 kV network run out of steam to be able to provide adequate voltages. Therefore, we propose this line to mitigate those issues. This project was covered last year during the presentation with a proposed in-service date of around 2020. We've been monitoring the load growth patterns up in northwest Minnesota, and we feel this project could be delayed out to about 2024. Going forward, we'll continue to monitor that load growth in the area to make sure we get the project in service at the right time. At this time, with the current characteristics of the project, we anticipate a cost of around $28 million for Otter Tail, which is estimated to be shared 50-50 with Minn Kota at this point in time.
Any questions on those projects? Okay, if we move on to slide 16, as I mentioned it kind of at the outset of this presentation, there was three kind of unique items that have been incorporated into this particular annual update. First one I'll touch on is the Big Stone 2 rider. You may recall we had a rider that was in place for the recovery of Big Stone 2 costs that ended last spring. And in an order within that particular rider docket, the commission had ordered that when that rider ended, that any remaining over under collection balance would be rolled into either our environmental rider or the transmission rider. And so it's in this update that we've taken that credit. There was a credit balance that we owed our customers of approximately we included $144,000. We found another $3,000 after we made the filing that will true up in the next filing next year. But so this credit balance that we owe our customers, we've rolled that credit into the rider, so it'll have a reduction in the revenue requirement calculation, and that will be the mechanism to help, you know, return those dollars, and it clears out the balance for the Big Stone 2 rider. We did make a compliance filing in the Big Stone 2 rider docket earlier, about a month ago or so, that summarized that this was transferred. There's a new revenue type that's also a revenue stream that's also being credited or included in our transmission, or we're proposing to include in there. Earlier this year, MISO established they call it the MVP ARR, or Auction Revenue Rights revenue stream. Basically, through the development of these multi-value projects within MISO, there's been an increase of some excess transmission capacity. And MISO, through their transmission rights process and allocation of these ARRs, they've created a mechanism to return any excess revenues back to the the load serving entities that are paying for the MVP project. So we're getting charged MVP expenses, and this revenue stream that's been created is being returned to the entities that are paying for those expenses. So it was a natural fit to, and the right thing to do is to include these credits back in our transmission rider. So it's a very small amount, it's only about $3,000, but over time we may see that grow. But again, it's just doing the right thing and returning it to the customers that are helping to pay for those projects. The last item, in 2012, First Energy left MISO, and at the time that they were still a participant or a TO within MISO, they had an obligation to pay for some of the transmission projects that were being cost shared on a regional basis. Well, when they left, MISO was still billing them for their portion of the costs and crediting transmission owners who were investing in these projects for the revenues. But FirstEnergy wasn't paying them. they were disputing whether they were obligated to pay for these, continue paying for those projects. And so we were getting credited for the revenues but not actually receiving the cash, and we had been passing on the revenues through the transmission rider as a credit. There was earlier this year, back in August, Otter Tail was, and this litigation has been going on for quite some time, and we were uncertain as to whether we would ever collect those revenues. We hadn't seen any collection, and so we didn't feel it was appropriate to continue passing a credit through that we weren't getting paid through, so we made an adjustment to reverse those prior credits until we got some resolution for, with this energy, the first energy issue. And this is something that all the transmission owners in MISO were being affected by. So basically there was a reversal of that credit done in August in the rider. There has been subsequently a resolution in First Energy is now going to pay MISO, and we are going to get the revenues. So we expected that we would have at some point in the future anyway, but we weren't sure how and when. Now we know that we are anticipating to get them back we'll actually receive payment. And so we will build those or factor those back in as another true-up item next year. It's about $70,000 is what the impact is. In the grand scheme of things, it's not material enough to affect the rate, and so that's why we're proposing we just make that true up as we do any other true ups in our next filing. So those are the three, I think, kind of unique items that are maybe a little bit different than what we've seen in past rider filings.
I'm going to have to leave in about 5 minutes, so okay. I think we're close to being done, but I just wanted to mention that.
Yep.
So
we can okay. Wrap up. Yep, and I think our key slide here is the next one, and I thought it would be important that we take some time just to kind of walk through, what is different in this particular application from a revenue requirement perspective as compared to what our revenue requirement was in the last update. And so what this table does is if you look at that first column, what we're reflecting there is the revenue requirement that was calculated last year this time, and rates for 2014 were developed on. And we had basically about a $4.3 million revenue requirement. If you look at line 5, we had a true-up from the prior recovery period of an over-collection of approximately $431,000 factored into that. So that had a reducing effect on the overall revenue requirement. If we start at the top, line 1, the rider calculates a revenue requirement based on all of the projects that are in the rider, the 14 projects that it would have been 12 last year, that we went through earlier. The revenue requirement associated with those projects was roughly about $5.1 million. Some of those projects are MISO cost-shared projects, which Otter Tail is actually an investor in, but we're getting a revenue stream from other MISO market participants. And so the $5 million credit is the Schedule 26 and 26A revenues that we're getting, which are related to the North Dakota share of the investment that's being made in those projects. And then line 3 is really the load sharing assessment from MISO of MISO Schedule 26 and 26A expenses that were being charged. Now, if you look at that's 2014, through the true-up process, the second line or column shows what, and when we replace forecast information with actual information, Early in 2014, we got updated MICE information from MISO that impacted both the expenses and the revenues. And you'll see where we had anticipated on the revenue side about $5 million coming in, it was actually only about $4.2 million. On the expense side, we saw the change go from $4.6 million, and it actually was an increase of close to about 5.6. So there's about $1.6 million of just change from the forecast information that we had available to us and what ultimately happened on those particular components. As you look at our 2015 proposed revenue requirement and you go across the top, you'll see where our actual spend is increasing on the projects. And some of it, again, is just related to the timing of spend on the various projects. We're seeing that increase of our revenue requirement jumping up to about $6 million. You can see our revenues coming in from MISO, approximately $5.3 million. So we are seeing a jump and an increase there. And again, as the rest of the regional projects continue to get built out, our MISO Schedule 26 and 26A expense allocation is increasing as well from about 5.6 in 2014, expecting it in the $6.5 million range. If you look at line 5 in our current proposal or the current revenue requirement, you can see a significant under recovery, and again, that was due to that shift in the reduction of 2014 revenues and the increase in the 2015 expenses. So as rates were put in place last year and, you know, actual collections came through, you know, we whittled down some of that $1.5 million, but you know, right now we're still estimating roughly a $1.2 million under collection. So, you know, that's the main components of the, you know, the revenue requirement calculation. So we're going from roughly 4.2 to about 8.4. Any questions?
So
that
concludes it. I don't have any additional questions. Do you, Brandy?
I do not. Sorry for being here late, though. I thought you guys were running late. I was waiting for a call that you were here. So,
I think that concludes what we need for both of these cases for now. We'll hopefully have Jerry back to help work on these things in the next couple of weeks. And what's your schedule on this?
On the transmission rider,
The
proposed effective date for the rate to go into effect is January 1.
Okay. And there must be a notice out on these, or is this not?
That, yeah. I think that ended on the 12th.
Of November?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we can work through this and get some action taken. We've got two meetings scheduled in December, so we should be able to wrap it up and get you guys an answer. But let's hear back on the information, some thoughts on the environmental costs and how we can recover those in a way that's clear to customers what we're doing. And so we can report back on that. Right? Anything else? Anybody? All right.
Thank you.